VT versus aberrancy? That is the question. This question gets asked all the time on internet ECG forums, and while I cannot provide the end-all answer in this short audio file, there are some important concepts that I want to convey which have served me well over decades, allowing me high accuracy in minimal time for optimal clinical decision-making. First, remember statistics. Studies have shown that the overwhelming majority of regular WCT rhythms, where WCT stands for wide complex tachycardia, the overwhelming majority of these rhythms will turn out to be VT. Taking all comers in adults, the literature tells us that at least 80% of all regular WCT rhythms without evidence of sinus P waves will be VT. And if your patient is older, say over 55, 60 or more, and if your patient has underlying heart disease, this figure goes up to 90% before you even look at the ECG, which is why we have to immediately assume VT until proven otherwise, not the other way around. So often I see people assuming the rhythm is supraventricular with either a pre-existing bundle branch block or aberrant conduction that causes QRS widening because of the fast rate. But that's not the right approach, and it helps to remember statistics. Knowing that the odds are at least 90% before you even look at the tracing, that the WCT rhythm in the older patient with heart disease who is in front of you is almost certain to be in VT. So treat the patient accordingly. If your patient is hemodynamically unstable because of the fast rate, then it no longer matters if the WCT rhythm is VT or some type of supraventricular rhythm, because immediate electricity, ideally by synchronized cardioversion, becomes the treatment of choice. That's because an SVT at a very fast rate, say 240 per minute, in a patient with borderline LV function may not be able to tolerate this rate for more than a brief period of time. Question: what blood pressure during a tachycardia is too low? The answer: there is no specific number. For example, the 80-pound, 80-year-old patient in front of you might be hemodynamically stable despite a systolic blood pressure of 75. And this patient may be petrified seeing people in white coats coming right at them with defibrillator paddles. Sometimes you just gotta be there in order to judge if the patient in front of you needs immediate cardioversion or not. Caveat number one. I will emphasize that my definition of hemodynamically unstable depends on the patient being unstable because of the fast rate. This is different than the patient who is in shock from sepsis or some other cause, in whom sinus tachycardia may be the only compensation they have to maintain perfusion. We don't want to shock a patient in sinus tachycardia. Caveat number two, the rate of the WCT rhythm is important. While specific precise rate limits do not exist, hemodynamic instability because of the fast rate is unlikely at rates below 120 to 130 or so per minute. Ventricular rhythms that are slower than this most probably represent AIVR, that is accelerated idioventricular rhythm, also known as slow VT, and patients in AIVR often remain hemodynamically stable, and they usually do not need cardioversion. AIVR is a common reperfusion arrhythmia, and in this clinical setting, it often spontaneously converts to sinus rhythm without need for specific treatment. Caveat number three. Sometimes, despite a persistent wide tachycardia, your patient may remain hemodynamically stable for surprisingly long periods of time. Cases of VT have been documented to persist not only for minutes, but for hours, and even for several days, because everyone around the bedside kept thinking this can't be VT because the blood pressure is 160 or 180 systolic. A high blood pressure in no way rules out the possibility of VT. Final caveat, is the rhythm regular? VT tends to be regular, although it most definitely is not always regular. And there are forms of VT, such as polymorphic VT, that can be very irregular. That said, most of the time with VT, there will be at least some semblance of regularity. This is different than atrial fibrillation in a patient with a pre-existing bundle branch block in whom complete irregularity of their Y tachycardia may help you distinguish the rhythm from VT. And if your patient with AFib and a wide QRS manifests a very fast AFib with rates that in places approach 250 per minute or more, think WPW as the diagnosis. Let's get back to the case at hand. If despite being in a regular WCT rhythm at 140 or more per minute, the patient in front of you is hemodynamically stable, that is, alert, with a reasonable blood pressure and not in distress with severe chest pain, shortness of breath, or obvious mental status changes, then regardless of whether the WCT rhythm is VT or SVT with either a pre-existing bundle branch block or QRS widening with aberrant conduction because of the fast rate, if your patient is stable, then by definition, you have at least a little time to consider the rhythm to see if you can become more comfortable with your rhythm diagnosis. You are right there and ready to immediately cardiovert if at any time during your evaluation your patient becomes hemodynamically unstable. People often think there are only two possible answers to what a rhythm might be. Either a WCT rhythm is VT, or it is supraventricular, that is some form of SVT with either pre-existing bundle branch block or aberrant conduction. But there is a third possibility, and much of the time you simply will not be able to be 100% certain from the limited information you have whether the rhythm is VT or SVT. So it's important to accept this third possibility, namely that your patient is in a WCT rhythm of uncertain etiology. As a result, much, if not most of the time, I make a relative probability assessment in which I consider that the patient in front of me is most likely to be in VT or most likely to be in an SVT, or that I realize I am no more than 50% certain or 75% certain, or perhaps much less than this, about what I think the rhythm might be. But I am comfortable in my skin knowing that it is okay not to always be 100% certain of the rhythm diagnosis at the time that I need to begin treatment with every patient that I see. So what criteria should you use for assessing the regular WCT rhythm in front of you? Realizing there are books that discuss this topic, what follows is merely my personal experience based on what works for me. I like to start with three simple rules for assessing a regular WCT rhythm. Rule number one, is there extreme axis deviation? If so, then VT is highly likely. I'll clarify that by extreme axis deviation, I mean that the QRS must be entirely negative in either lead 1 or in lead AVF. It doesn't have to be entirely negative in both lead 1 and lead AVF, just in one of these leads. Moderate axis deviation doesn't count, so the presence of even a small positive R wave in these leads is enough to negate the diagnostic value of this criterion. I'll emphasize that much of the time, frontal plane axis won't help in your assessment of the rhythm, but in those cases in which you do have true extreme axis deviation, this finding, which is easy to assess, greatly increases the likelihood that the rhythm is VT. Rule number two. Look at QRS morphology in lead V6. When the etiology of the rhythm is supraventricular, there will almost always be at least some positive activity traveling toward the left ventricle, and therefore a positive QRS in lead V6. If ever the QRS in lead V6 is either all negative or almost all negative, then VT is highly likely. I'll stress that this criterion only helps if there is no more than a tiny R wave in lead V6. If the R wave is more than a few millimeters tall, then this criterion doesn't help you. Rule number three, the uglier the QRS complex during the WCT rhythm, the more likely the rhythm is VT. The reason for this is that aberrant conduction almost always manifests some form of conduction defect. That is, QRS morphology with aberrant conduction may resemble right bundle branch block or left bundle branch block or left anterior or left posterior hemiblock or some combination of these conduction defects. Aberrant conduction occurs because the rapid heart rate reduces the time available for recovery of one or more parts of the hemifascicular or bundle branch system, and this results in a rate-related bundle branch block or hemiblock pattern. In contrast, VT originates from a ventricular focus outside of the conduction system, and as a result, ventricular conduction is far less organized, and the QRS complex is likely to be wider and unlike the morphology of any known conduction defect. The caveat is that some patients with long-standing severe heart disease may have an extremely abnormal baseline tracing, which you might not know about if you've never seen a prior tracing on your patient. But when the WCT rhythm in front of you does not resemble any known form of conduction defect, this strongly favors VT as the diagnosis. I fully acknowledge there are many more criteria to consider and not enough time in this brief audio recording to go into them all, but I'll mention one more criterion that continually comes up, and that is AV dissociation. If you see AV dissociation during a WCT rhythm, this finding is virtually diagnostic of VT. That said, it is extremely uncommon in my experience of looking for AV dissociation for over 3 decades to find it during VT when the rate of the VT is fast, because P waves will usually be hidden within the QRS complex or within the ST segment. Seeing what you think is atrial activity doesn't count. You have to be able to walk out P waves in order to prove AV dissociation. Remember, 1-to-1 retrograde P wave activity does not distinguish between VT and SVT, because both VT and reentry SVT rhythms may conduct retrograde with a 1-to-1 ratio. I'll conclude with a word about measurements. There are many criteria in the literature that cite specific measurements, such as the time delay for attaining the lowest point in the S wave. If there is delay beyond 0.1 second, this favors VT. That said, it is both time-consuming as well as being incredibly difficult to try to distinguish in each of the 6 chest leads between a 0.09 second negative finding versus a 0.10 second positive finding in the setting of trying to deal with a patient in front of me who is crashing. So, in my experience, I've not found use of specific measurement criteria to be helpful at the bedside when assessing a sick patient who presents with a wide tachycardia. What I do use instead is my subjective assessment of relative delay. The initial path of supraventricular impulses is generally conducted quite rapidly, with no more than minimal delay. So the initial R wave or S wave deflection tends to be narrower in supraventricular rhythms than in VT. So without actually measuring, if it appears that the initial part of the QRS complex is angled or delayed rather than manifesting a straighter, that is steeper, ascent or descent, this favors VT, albeit far from a definitive finding. Bottom line, is your patient with a regular WCT rhythm hemodynamically stable? If not, then cardiovert. If your patient is stable, then you have at least a moment in time to consider your differential diagnosis, but remember that most of these patients will be in VT, even if the blood pressure reading is good. So assume VT until you prove otherwise and treat your patient accordingly.